The third case of the morning is number 014336, Earl Wilson against John C. Battles.
Good morning, gentlemen. It is a pleasure. It's over.
Good morning, Mr. Cohen.
The issue in this case is very simple, and that is whether something is pending in the Illinois Supreme Court when there is still time to file a petition for a hearing. I make two very simple arguments that it is pending. Number one is that there's a decision of the Illinois Supreme Court that sort of that indicates that that would be pending. It's cited on page 16 of my brief, Woodson versus City of Chicago, and there's a quotation which reads, when the appeal of that order was dismissed for want of prosecution on September 27, 1990, and a petition for a hearing was not filed within 21 days, the dismissal order became final in the appellate court lowest jurisdiction. And that means on the date that the 21 days ran. Second, one can look at this court's opinion in a case which I didn't cite, but I did on Friday advise the government of in a comparable area, and that is Durandon versus United States, which is 154 Federal 3rd 672, where the court says, where Congress includes a particular language in one section of an act but omits it in another section of the act, it is presumed that Congress intended to exclude the language and the language will not be employed. So if you look at the 28 U.S.C., you see that the court in Section A referred to something when the judgment became final, which the state is saying final in the date of the decision of the court. And if you look at the section that controls here, the time during which a properly filed application for state post-conviction petition or other collateral review with respect to the pertinent judgment or claim is pending. The Congress could have very easily used the final type of language as they did up above and instead used the language of pending in this situation. Pending means the court still has jurisdiction to act on it under the rules and regulations. The Illinois Supreme Court still had the matter before it until the 21 days for the petition for a hearing expired, and therefore it was still pending before the court. In addition to citing that federal case, since I always like to add a little humor to my argument, I would cite Conan Doyle, who wrote many of the Sherlock Holmes stories.
He was a doctor who used cocaine. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, he may have, Your Honor, but lots of us have read him and considered, and what he said had force and an effect. And what he said, and lots of people quote this quotation, but they quote it from the wrong book, and I looked it up. From his book, From Silver Blaze, there's the following conversation between Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. And Sherlock Holmes says, "Is there any point to which you would wish to draw my attention?" I'm sorry, Dr. Watson says, Sherlock Holmes says, "To the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime." "The dog did nothing," said Watson. "That's what was curious," remarked Sherlock Holmes. And I'm not making a comparison between dogs and Congress, please. I'm not trying to follow it that far. But Congress said pending when they could have said, you know, when the last decision came down.
The dog didn't bark, and that was the clue.
That was the clue.
They didn't respond. They didn't say anything. That's the clue.
That's the clue. And the clue here is that Congress used one term, a final, when the opinion is final, and the other term, well, it's still pending. And here a matter is still pending until the time for petitionary hearing expires. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Hoffman.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. I am Assistant Attorney General Jay Hoffman. It's my pleasure to represent the warden respondent in this case. Before I get into exactly what I said in my brief, what the respondent's position is, and as Mr. Cohen says, there are two very simple issues here, whether or not the state post-conviction matter was pending after the Supreme Court denied leave to appeal, and whether or not, if that is not the case, this court should apply equitable tolling, as counsel for petitioner has also asked. But I do want to note something, and this comes up merely because of the strength of the language that Mr. Cohen used in his reply brief. He indicated very strongly, and although he did cite to Illinois Supreme Court 367 and the committee's comments regarding whether or not the Illinois Supreme Court will entertain a motion for reconsideration within 21 days after denial for PLA, he cited no case law for that, and I indeed have found none. However, I want to make it clear, although I did not specifically contend that, because I believe that even without that contention, we should win this case. It is not the respondent's position. The respondent does not accept the fact that the Illinois Supreme Court will entertain a motion for reconsideration or a petition for rehearing within 21 days after the denial of a PLA. And while I did not move under this court's Rule 52, I would note that under this court's Rule 52, it has the ability to sua sponte, ask the Illinois Supreme Court to speak to that issue of law. And should this case come down to that question, I think it would behoove this court to ask the Illinois Supreme Court so that we do not have incorrect state law stated in this court's opinion. That being the case,
so your view is they will not consider such a petition.
Exactly, Your Honor.
There's no record in their official reports of their considering such petitions?
No. As a matter of fact, Your Honor, counsel cited to a case he had, and I will tell you that I did not, and we debated this, but there is no law on this issue. However, I will tell you, I have recently seen cases. I recently seen answer from the Illinois Supreme Court to a petitioner in another case in which the Illinois Supreme Court says, we don't entertain motions for rehearing. If you file a motion to be allowed to file a motion for rehearing, we will consider that motion to be allowed to file a motion for rehearing.
What's the difference?
But that's not...
Difference.
The practical difference is that essentially they do not retain jurisdiction. They will, if you ask, decide whether or not to hear your... It's sort of like...
Long before you started to practice law, when I began, Illinois had abolished the writ of error quorum nobis, and in its place they put a motion in the nature of a writ of error quorum nobis. And I was never able to understand the difference between the two, and I do not understand the difference between saying we do not entertain petition for rehearing, but we will entertain a motion to file a petition for rehearing. I don't understand the practical difference.
A motion to be allowed to file a motion rehearing.
What's the difference? I assume if they can entertain the motion, they can grant it.
Yes, they can.
And if they can grant it, then they still have the right to hear the motion for rehearing.
Well, your point is that it's a distinction without a difference. My point is that it's not, because it indicates that counsel did not have an absolute right, as he said.
Not an absolute right. There's never an absolute right. I suppose you're dealing with the Supreme Court, but you have a right to file, and they have a right to take it.
They have a right to...
They have not lost jurisdiction.
To grant the motion grant the motion for leave to appeal.
There you go.
And what brought this on, Your Honor, again, is the rather strong language in petitioner's reply brief, in which he contends that had he filed a motion...
Your Honor's given a strong language, and don't be frightened by it.
Well, no, my point is only that he said in there that had he filed a motion for reconsideration, the Supreme Court would have had to hear it, and that's simply not true.
What about a motion to vacate?
A motion to... Well, I never considered that, Your Honor, and I don't know that...
Well, that would, if that would permit perhaps a reconsideration.
Well, it might. It's not typical that one would file a motion to vacate in the Supreme Court from their own denial of an order. You ask oftentimes a higher court to vacate a judgment from a lower court. In any event.
Well, I guess the issue is, do they have jurisdiction to entertain these types of motions?
Well, my position would be that no, there is no provision for a motion for a rehearing. Judge Bauer says that, well, it doesn't matter because they can grant you the right if you file a preliminary motion in order to do it. My position is that's not the same thing. More importantly, the respondent's position is that it doesn't matter. The respondent's position is that even if you say that they have jurisdiction in that 21 days, that one cannot say that a matter is pending when a final judgment has been handed down, and there's no doubt counsel's citing to Woodson notwithstanding. If you look at Woodson, as I set forth in my brief, that matter did not control. What they said there was indeed dicta, did not control their decision, unlike the case of PSL Realty versus Granite, which I cited in my brief and which the district court in another case dismissing as untimely, which I cited in my brief, Freiburg, relied upon, and cases from the Illinois Appellate Court citing the PSL. It's clear that the rule in Illinois is a judgment is final when it is handed down. Whether or not they can attack that, whether or not you can file something within 21 days or 35 days afterwards, the ruling of the Illinois Supreme Court in PSL Realty and Woodson did not overrule that, is that a judgment is final when it is handed down.
Is that the same in an intermediate appellate court?
Yes, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, PSL was a case, unless I mention, I guess, in which the Supreme Court was saying that an appellate court judgment was final when it was handed down. They were sitting in review of a lower court case. And as I said, there are several cases, I cited two of them, in which Illinois appellate court cases, appellate courts cite the PSL with approval and follow it. Our position basically is that one cannot say something is pending when there has been a final judgment and that judgment is never, ever attacked. There's no doubt that there was no motion to reconsider filed here. How one can say that something is pending when there's nothing before the court and the court has made a final judgment is beyond me, and that's the respondent's position here. In that regard, I have cited from Schwartz v. Myers, which is the case that petitioner primarily relies upon, and in that case it says, an action or suit is pending from its inception until the rendition of final judgment. Their opinion regarding what a final judgment is different than the Illinois Supreme Court's different opinion of what a final judgment in Illinois is. And our position is that they should have looked to, in that case, the state law of the state that they were, state decision they were reviewing, as we believe this court should. Under such cases that this court has announced as Jefferson v. Wellborn, Freeman v. Page, Jones v. I think it's Syrett, which are all habeas corpus cases in which this court has indicated that a question of what is pending or timing of state law is governed by the state court. And so this court should look to the state court opinion of PSL Realty. In that regard, as I've set forth, this court should note that Schwartz was of the opinion, it was a case where, much like this court's case of Freeman v. Page, there was a petition for state post-conviction relief that was denied. It was affirmed, the denial was affirmed in the appellate court, and then it went on, and the Supreme Court, and no filing, no petition for leave to appeal to the Supreme Court was made until later. In that case, the petitioner filed a motion to be allowed to file a late PLA. The court in Schwartz said, well, all the time until that motion was ruled on is told. This court has taken a different tack in Freeman v. Page when it said, no, only from when he filed that motion to be allowed to file a late PLA until the Supreme Court decides it, that area is told. So it would indicate that logically this court would not follow and believe that the 21 days under which one arguably has jurisdiction to attack the Supreme Court's denial of a PLA is nothing is pending. However, this court obviously in Freeman, or this court did in Freeman, specifically reserve that question. However, it's hard to see how if one someone does eventually find a motion, file a motion, that it wasn't pending during that 21 days, that when one never files it, it can be pending. I see my time is up, Your Honor. I'm sorry I've been wording. I simply wish to respond to Mr. Cohen's cite to Conan Doyle, and I absolutely agree. The question, the issue here is that the petitioner never barked.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Mr. Cohen has 5 minutes.
I have wasn't up for 5 minutes. I again refer you to the statute itself, the federal statute, number one. In 1A, it reads, the date on which the judgment became final by the conclusion of direct review or the expiration of time seeking that review. That's very different under 2, which talks about the time during which the properly filed application for state post-conviction or other collateral review with respect to the pertinent judgment or claim is pending. Different language. Congress could have used the same type of final judgment language in 2 in, as it did in 1A if it meant these provisions to have the same meaning. It didn't. And 2, the rule of law in Illinois, and maybe you should certify to them, is that a matter is pending and their petition for rehearing can be filed within that 21 days. It has nothing to do with a mandate in some other cases. And the best example of that is in a case which I thought it might have been cited in one of these cases, People versus Risley. It's a decision of the Illinois Supreme Court that came down, it's a decision of the Illinois Supreme Court to grant rehearing, but the petition for rehearing was filed within the 21 days. It was a 4-3 opinion dealing with a post-conviction case, dealing with whether the error of the lawyer in providing information to the defendant of when he could file, it can be a basis for extending the time for filing the post-conviction petition or appeal.
Is Risley cited in your brief?
No, it's not cited in either brief.
Would you file a Rule 28J letter, please?
Yes, I will. I will. But, you know, it just came up. And in that case, what I'll attempt to get for this court the date when the petition for rehearing was filed, the date of the original opinion, the date for the petition for rehearing when it was filed, and then a long time until they just a few days ago granted the petition for rehearing. But shows that the court had jurisdiction to act on that because they did act. And I'll get, it may be, Your Honor, a few days before I get the letter out, my secretary, who's worked with me for 28 years, is only part-timer. She just came back today. Her husband died 2 weeks ago of a heart attack, so she's in and out, you know, adjusting. But I'll get it to you by the end of the week. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under